Welcome to the Maneuver Meta, where I, and sometimes Paul, discuss the evolving meta in Flames of War version 4 Late War. I'm Lexi, and I've been playing Flames of War on and off for around 11 years. While I've played on and off, I've continually collected a large German, American, and Soviet armies. At the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, I dragged my roommate Paul kicking and screaming into the Flames of War community.
Hello everybody, this month's episode of the Maneuver Meta is sponsored by Gamers Revolt. Need to pick up any hobby supplies or models? Be sure to check them out.
So let's declare our stance to maneuver and ready our reserves. Hello everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Maneuver Meta. We got a treat in here for you today. Paul is working, making pizzas, and so to make it so that I'm not just talking to myself in this room, I brought on one of my good friends here, Danny. Say hi, Danny.
Hi.
So, Flames of War, what do you play?
Okay, I play British and Finland in mid and late war. For both armies. Mm-hmm. I have a pretty big collection of both, but they're the only two that I play.
Yeah, and your British are now technically award-winning.
Yeah, they are painting.
You won a painting. You now have more award-winning armies than I do.
Yeah. That was with my SAS parachute squadron at Gen Con. I made a display board for them, and I had French Resistance models that Lexi printed for me.
Yeah. So if you're watching on YouTube, I'll make sure in some point in here that I'll be putting a photo up of that list. So if you're listening to this podcast and you want to see the award-winning army, go check out the YouTube video. I'll have photos of it posted there. But you only play Flames of War?
I mean, I might get into Team Yankee.
With my incessant nudging. What's it like once or twice a week? Hey man, you should check out this Team
Yankee. It's gotta happen, but yeah.
Yeah. All right, so on to our next portion here, hobby. So, I mean, for me, it's been a little bit of everything. I made a deal with my partner that she would buy me STLs for Tau so that I can finally start printing and collecting my Tau army for Warhammer 40,000 if paint is on every single one of my Flames of War and Team Yankee models. And so the bit where she was reasonable was she said they don't have to be done. They have to be done to a level you are comfortable with where you can put them on the table. And so the way I'm doing it is I'm doing the base coating and the zenitholing so that it's ready to go for brush painting so I can take it off the shelf when a tournament's ready, like I was doing with my Panthers. If you guys are following me on TikTok, watching the hobby street going up, and paint them as needed. So I've been an absolute machine over the past few weeks. Done 16 Churchills, 8 Panthers, 4 Mobile Wagons, 6 250 Recce, and then I did a whole bunch of Americans, bunch of Shermans, and then for I'm starting to work through the Soviets for Team Yankee because I got a lot of Soviet stuff to do. I got 5 BTRs built out of 25. I got 25 T-55s to build. I got 6 Frogfoots. So needless to say, I got quite a bit. But I have gotten a massive dent in the collection, which you'll see on screen. I'll be sharing a photo here of my full collection. I did some, I guess you could call it, fall cleaning, summer cleaning, I don't know, whatever time of the year it is. I cleaned everything out, put it all out on the table, and I am very, it's always difficult for me, but I'm really trying to pat myself on the back because a lot of that table was painted.
It's summer, by the way.
It's summer?
Yes. Still technically summer. It's summer until I turn the fan off in my room.
Summer until you turn the fan off. Fair. Yeah. That's a good gauge. But yeah, it's always difficult for me to compliment myself on a job well done. That's something that I try and work on. But As you can see in this photo, that is a lot of green, a lot of tan, and a lot of Dunkelgelb. But it's a process, and it's getting done. What about you, Danny? What have you been building, painting?
Well, I have a backlog of things that I need to assemble now, and I've been working on that. I also have some, like, gun teams of various descriptions that I need to paint. So I've been working on those. Two of them are PAC-40s. For the only finish list that lets you have more than two.
The ever awkward double team unit.
Yeah. It's a tragedy. Anyway. Yeah. And also some, like, heavy machine guns and stuff. But, yeah.
Yeah, you were playing those nests last time, kind of messing around with them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so we're both trucking along, both continuing to doing things, getting slaying the gray, as I've heard it put.
That sounds so weird.
Or I guess it wouldn't be gray, because gray's more GW, because Battlefront does that weird bit where they color their plastic to be the base coat for each of the armies. I don't know if you've noticed that, but each army has a different color base-coated plastic.
But some of them aren't the color they should be.
They aren't, but they're different colors.
The German ones are just yellow.
Yeah, which is different from the British ones, which are brown-green. Which are different from the American ones, which are brown. More than something like GW does.
Yeah,
you know, GW is just flat gray. But anyway, so on to our next segment, which is just going to be an introduction here. I'm going to be starting to do a rules lawyer segment, because between myself, you, Danny, Paul, and a bunch of the other people in our play group, we tend to play on a competitive level, and some of the rules lawyering discussions back and forth can get pretty interesting, and little snippets of the rules that may be lesser known. And so for today's segment, I'm going to kind of do a did you know. And the did you know for today is line of sight for an artillery spotter is not blocked by friendly units at any time.
Yeah, that one's true.
Yep, that was one that messed me up for a long time, where I don't know if it was a misunderstanding or something, but I just played around it for almost a year and a half, 2 years. I just always gave a fire lane.
Well, I mean, I really don't use artillery that much because I play one army with bad artillery and one army that can't afford it.
Oh, man. I mean, in between me, my Americans for Flames of War played with a pretty fair amount of artillery.
Yeah.
My Soviets are in our all-or-nothing artillery deal, where it's like I'm going to run a whole bunch of 76mm batteries, because then it's going to be, hey, I got three of these for 24 points. You can take care of two of them, but that third one's going to start popping you up. But then my Soviets for Team Yankee. Team Yankee artillery is very, very interesting, so I tend to use that a lot, even though they're only skill 5, which makes it rough.
The army I play with the bad artillery is British, by the way, and I'll explain more of that probably when we go over the tournament I played in. Yeah.
All right, so then into our next segment, which we'll segue there for the tournament. Battle Alley was this Saturday. Unfortunately, I was sick this weekend, so I wasn't able to attend, so I'll only be able to share what list I was going to be taking if I did go. But Danny went and took third place. Right?
Yep, third place.
Took third place. Good job on that, man. And you were playing British?
Yeah, I was playing British.
Okay. So the special rules that Battle Alley had set up, this is put on by Battle Badgers up in Wisconsin, one of the tri-state teams between them, us, the Thunderbolts, and then Indiana has Able Company. So this was up in Franklin, Wisconsin, in a bowling alley, which was kind of interesting, but from the photos it looked like you guys were in the basement or
something. We were in the basement of the bowling alley. It looked like it was a place that, like, rents out the basement to do events.
All right, so like a little reception.
Yeah, and actually the bowling alley was almost like a bar, too.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Well, Wisconsin.
It's just like a stage for events, you know.
Which is neat, though. Neat that they're willing to work with something like that, you know? Like, have a bunch of guys, hey, we play tabletop miniature games. Can we rent out your basement?
Yeah.
You know, I always think that's neat when companies are willing to assist like that.
Yeah.
But so the special rules that they had in place, it was a 110-point list size. Late War was the theater. And the only change to the rules that they had, they were using the extended mission matrix or extended battle plans. I always forget what they're called. They removed the word deep from reserves. So if you rolled a mission that had deep reserves, you still had reserves. You just ignored the deep portion. And did they also do a drop one stance selection as well?
You can't use any of them twice.
Okay.
So you had to use all three stances.
Oh, you had to use all three, so it wasn't a drop one. Okay, so it was attack, maneuver, defend.
Yeah.
Okay, so that, I always love it when that happens. But yeah, so that was the big one, though. Deep reserves did not exist. So I know for my list, I'd written around that, and you brought a... You were pretty ballsy with your list. Not something that you would always see, but we can go right into that with you. What'd you bring for this?
So I was playing a Desert Rats Cromwell Armored Company. And so do you want me to just like go down the list and say everything? Okay. Yeah, so in the... that was my formation, was the Desert Rats Cromwells. So I had two 75mm armed Cromwells for my HQ. And then I had two units of three Cromwells with the 75s and one Firefly in each unit. And the Firefly is a Sherman with the 17-pounder cannon. And then I had two units of four Desert Rats Stuarts, which... so that was my recon. And then in support, I had the four M10 17-pounder Achilles, which is in every British list. Then I had two units of two Averys, and I'll explain what an Avery is in a second, because not everybody might know that one. And then I had just a full-strength, British rifle platoon, with, kangaroo transports, which is just a U.S. priest with the gun removed and used as a troop carrier. And I also upgraded the riflemen to be Canadian, so they have the Relentless 3+ rally, and then I had a lucky card. That's it.
Yeah, pretty well rounded, a little bit of everything. And
yeah,
I think the lacking of the deep reserves was neat, because that minimal change, again, all in my opinion, is it enabled people to bring tank companies. You know, the majority of the time, if deep reserves is on the table, that has evolved.
We saw a lot of more heavy tanks in this.
The meta has evolved around that when you're playing not being allowed to pick any stance twice. I feel like we just need to make up some sort of lingo for it. So for a no stance duplication? No, that's too
bad. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, but the meta has evolved with defend being needed to be in there with reserves, that people tend to take infantry companies with armored support. Of having one kind of armored unit, be a super tanks or a couple of small units.
A lot of people will take armored car companies too, because those don't get hit by deep.
Yeah, because those don't get hit by deep, so you can spam them out on the board.
And depending on what the armor of your light tanks is, sometimes people will do that. Although I can't think of any that are really meta, and not in late war, but definitely in mid war.
But yeah, it made it so that there was actual tank companies, because people weren't having to worry about divvying up what was having to go into reserve off of the deep rule with it being removed. So I thought that was neat. I thought that was kind of a neat thing to change it up a little.
Also, like, another thing about the tournament is it was only 2-hour rounds. And that matters, because usually 2.5 hours is the standard. So you have to play fast in order to not get a draw in 2 hours. So at least for the Thunderbolts, when people that were going were talking about what list they were going to take, we urged each other to play tank companies that'll play quickly, so that we don't
keep that turn time down.
So as far as my list is, like, its strengths and weaknesses, it's extremely fast. The Cromwells are just about the fastest tanks you can get. The Stuarts are pretty fast too. They're only tactical 12, not anything ridiculous like some of the mid-war stuff that's tactical 14. Crusaders are tactical 14.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But their dash is like, it's 28 inches cross-country off the top of my head. and that actually mattered a lot in one of the games that I played, but I'll get into that. So as far as this list, though, you'll notice that it doesn't have any artillery. That's because British artillery is kind of mid.
It's either overpointed or just so bad it's not even worth it.
It's overpointed, mostly. Like, the your two actual, artillery options are something with a 25-pounder, so either the emplaced ones or the, what are they called? The... It's priests. On the tip of my tongue. Not priests. The other thing. I don't remember.
Sextons.
Yes, sextons. Yeah. Sextons and priests. And the priests are pretty good, but, like, because they have the 3-plus firepower, and the 25-pounders only have a 4-plus. But the priests are really, really expensive. So, if you're... Basically, if you can't get mortars, you... just really don't take artillery. Instead, you use, like, crocodiles and avaries to clear out infantry. And the avaries are really good at that. So the only thing that I was missing out on in this list was smoke bombardments. I didn't have any. So that wouldn't be an option for me in any of the games. So
I almost feel like your maneuverability is almost a smoke screen in and among itself. You know, being able to just go, you know what, I'm not doing this. Skirt your way.
That's
around.
Exactly what happened in one of the games. Yeah, so should I get into the game?
Here, I can go through my list real quick, though. So my list that I was going to be taking was a Bulge German list, a dual formation, what'd you call it, a Nittelcat? Because I really liked that.
Nittelcat?
Nittelcat. I really liked that, because it's a Brigade Panther company with a Schnell Group Nittel. And so the Nittelcats. So my Brigade Panther company had... 2 platoons of 3 Panthers, and the HQ section of 2 Panthers, with 4 Warblewinds that I upgraded to mobile wagons, basically turning them into Bofors. You know, the capability to have mobile AT-7 firepower 4+, especially in the half-track armored car meta, is though those things can shred when they absolutely need to. And I mean, you taught me that in mid-war firsthand, what that does to light armor.
Yeah.
Then my only support option that I had was I'm bummed I wasn't able to go because I was really looking forward to testing this, was running 4 grills instead of 3 Wesps. So getting the extra gun, the extra chassis, it's 4 vehicles instead of 3, a 2+ firepower instead of 3+ firepower, but no smoke bombardment.
Yeah, their range is a little bit limited, too. Yeah, it's a long mortar. Not a big deal.
I think it's 52 or 56 inches or something. It's a long mortar, like which... Ain't that bad. But then for the Nittle part of the Nittelcat, it's a reconnaissance company. And so the way that I kind of finagled this into place was I took the HQ unit in a singular Puma, the 5-centimeter 8-rad armored car that they flew around in that looked like it was from the 1960s, even though it was made in 1940s. Then I had 4 sections of... SDKFZ 250s, the little small armored half tracks that zip around with 2-centimeter guns. So 12 little armored cars. Then 2 units of 7 MG42 teams with Panzerfaust, reconnaissance platoons, and then a 4 model unit of mortars, 8-centimeter mortars in the half tracks, and then a 6 strong unit of the armored 7.5 centimeters, which is the short 7.5 from mid-war that they repurposed onto a half track
for use in late war. Stummels?
Yeah, Stummels, something like that.
Okay.
And then the only other command card that I took was just Lucky. And so it was... that was the list I was planning on running. It was very awkward for me the first few games, but I started getting the flow of it, and I really did enjoy it. And for 105 late war games, I'm probably going to be trying to figure out a slightly modified version of this to run it, because I just feel like the spam potential with the armored cars backed up with 8 front armor 10 Panthers.
Yeah.
Like that alone. And the fact of the matter being, this list could play deep reserves.
Yeah, it could. You know? The only thing I would think with it is in a tournament, you have to be careful with it because you might just be giving your opponent points when you do win the game.
Yeah, or you'll have a lot of 6-3s instead of 8-1s and 7-2s. Yeah.
You need to get 8-1s in order to really place.
Get up there. But yeah, that was my list. I was really bummed I didn't make it, but you know, sometimes shit like that just happens. So now I'm swapping over to Team Yankee to begin getting practice for Dragonfall, because I am going to drag myself to that kicking and screaming if I need to. Yeah, this next bit is all going to be Danny kind of going through what Battle Alley was like, because I only got to witness it secondhand through messages from him after each game, and photographs that the Battle Badger guys put up. So take it away, Danny.
Yeah, I didn't take as many pictures as I wanted to. I just kind of forgot about it. And with the 2-hour time limit, I couldn't think about that while I was playing the games, but whatever.
You couldn't stutter yourself.
So the first round, I don't remember his full name. His first name was Earl. That's who I played against. He was a Battle Badgers guy, so a local guy. And his list was kind of a troll list, but I mean, it was good, but how many Panzer 470s did he have? Jeez. I want to say, like, more than 12.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. He had two entire companies of Panzer 470s. He had one brigade and one SS company of them. And then he had, like, 12 or 18 AA half-tracks. Not the drillings, just the 2 centimeters. And then, like, a handful of recon, and he had one platoon of infantry.
So he just really likes his frying pans.
I don't know. It was fun. He was a good guy to play against. Anyway, so the board we were playing on had really bizarre terrain. Actually, the boards that the Badgers had were, like, so weird, and some of them, like, so dense in all the wrong places, that it led to some really interesting games.
So almost changing it up. You know, making it so that
You'll see what I mean as I go through this explanation. So this one had 4 hills, one in each corner, and they were like edge hills, like in the corner, like actually against the edge of the board. So there was no way you could go hull down on it unless somebody was like corner to quarter on you, like near the edge of the hill.
All right.
So they were basically hills that you couldn't hide behind.
Yeah.
But you could use them to get, like, a high vantage point over some of the fields that were in front of them.
And then have the debate of, is it worth me putting a unit up here to take away concealment, knowing that it's going to have the same return fire?
Yeah. Not that happened in the game. It didn't. But the real thing, though, was there were several tree lines down the middle of the board. But it wasn't exactly the middle of the board. It was about, like, 5 or 6 inches to one side. And the mission we got was no retreat. Yes, no retreat. It was no retreat. So, no retreat. I picked defend, and he picked attack.
For the stances?
Yeah. I know I picked defend, and he picked something other than defend, so we got no retreat. I think you had to pick attack in order to get that.
I think so.
It might be a maneuver one, too, because I know the one has deep in it. I don't know. Anyway. But, of course, with the rules of the tournament, deep wasn't...
Yeah, wasn't there.
So I, like, literally, like, I saw the board, and as soon as the mission was no retreat, I measured to see where the tree line was, and then picked the side that would put me behind it. because in no retreat, your deployment zone goes all the way up to the midway point of the table.
Yeah.
So there was this tree line with only like 3 or 4 like decent gaps in it all the way across the middle of the board. So then I took my 5 minefields and lined them up on one side so you could only attack along one side. Pretty much, like, otherwise he would have to go through the minefield.
I kind of like that with tables, though, when they make tables that are not exactly balanced, so to speak, you know? Like, I don't know how much 40K you've looked at with 9th edition, but there are actual recommended pamphlets for table layout, so that the tables are equal in terrain, which personally, I'm not a huge fan of. I love uneven tables.
Yeah, you're going to have to...
So that you have to either figure it out, because that for me, that's a level of realism.
Actually, when I played 40K in, like, 7th edition, I got so tired of every table looking exactly
the same. Yeah, and that's one of the things I love about Flames of War, and not just the table, but the missions.
Yeah.
You know, the missions. Every single mission is going to play differently. But I really personally enjoy that when a tournament or a store that's playing games or something puts it out where... This side of the table is obviously going to favor the defender because that's part of the game.
Yeah. So, anyway, he had all those Panzer 470, but they only have a 5+ cross check.
That's right.
So he couldn't go through the tree lines, or at least he decided not to. So he basically, like, lined up the Panzer 470s all the way across the board, like, even behind the minefield, and tried to, like, get shots on the things that I did put up against the tree line. And I almost lost all of my Stuarts by actually doing that, because, like, I stayed gone to ground on the first, like, my first turn was literally I moved my HQ to the other side of the board where it would be safer, and I said, like, this may come as a surprise, but that's my turn, go. and then the next turn the half tracks moved up, the Stuarts shot at them, and then filled their scoot and shoots. And then the Panzer 470 shot at them, and I lost two Stuarts and got a bunch bailed out, so I kind of lucked out. But, he didn't... he was hesitant to advance his things anywhere, like, past the minefield, pretty much. Besides the half-tracks and everything, so...
Well, and if he's playing Brigade, he's sitting on a... not a good skill, you know, not the veteran German skill where you can actually kind of do something
about it. The SS ones...
I think are trained?
I can't remember which ones it was, but some of them actually did end up going through the minefield out of desperation. Honestly, I think he should have just, like, parking-lotted the other side and said, the ones that get through the tree line are the ones that get through the tree line, but, anyway. So, that one just ended up being, like, stuff filtered through... And got killed by my tanks. My reserves showed up eventually. And it got to the point where he had his infantry barely contesting the objective while both Avery units rolled up to them and...
So for those that don't know what Averys are, you want to give a quick point on what these monsters are?
I think
are?
I tried to explain that earlier and then didn't really...
Yeah.
Okay, so the way they work is... they're like an artillery unit, but they only have a 6-inch range. They're allowed to move and fire artillery. They completely ignore danger close. And they have an auto firepower, but it's only AT1. So it's pretty much useless against any armored tank team, but against infantry. And also it's brutal.
And you can only have you can only have two, right?
Yeah, it's only two in a unit. Yeah. And they ignore the rule about having to re-roll to hit for having only two teams in the... Or having, you know, less than three.
Yeah, and that makes sense, because if you're required to only take two...
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the aircraft with rockets and bombs, you know? If you're only allowed to have
It's the
two,
same as the aircraft rule. So... Basically, what you do with them is you move up to, like, 6 inches of the enemy, and then you range in.
They're vets, right?
They're veterans, so 3+ skill. And then anyone that gets hit has to re-roll their successful saves, and if they fail it, it doesn't matter if they're dug in, they're dead. Because it's firepower auto. So I have two of those units. So if there's a dug-in infantry unit, I don't expect it to survive more than... two rounds of me shooting those things at
it. Oh, yeah. You just flub gun them. Roll yourself in, and, man, they're freaking brutal. But they're able to be dealt with from the opposing player's point of view because they do only have two tanks in the unit.
Yeah.
So if
you kill one, it's last stand checks for the rest of the thing.
Yeah, but...
And also their range, 6 inches, is really short.
Yeah, which makes
and
it so...
They're front armor 9. Because it's a Churchill chassis,
and especially now with Bulge German out, 9 is nothing to write home about anymore.
Yeah, they are killable anyway. Yeah. So that's how that game went. So I ended that one 8-1. So then after the lunch break, I came back and my opponent was actually Joe Lewis for the second game. And his list was the British Daimler Recon Company.
Oh, car spam?
Well, he had that, but it wasn't really a car spam. Okay. He had just like the HQ, and then he had, I think, 2 units of the Daimlers, maybe 3. And then he had 2 units of carriers, so that's only like a 9-point formation. And then he had a second formation, which was Desert Rats Infantry. And he had the Bagpiper HQ, which I thought was kind of neat.
Yeah.
His infantry actually looked kind of cool. They had, like, apparently if you set them up right, it makes, like, a diorama. And there's, like, one of them had, like, a civilian car on their base. And I don't know. Oh, it was cool. So he had 2 platoons of the Desert Rats with the HQ, and then a couple 3-inch mortars. What else did he have?
M10s, I think you're mentioning.
He had 2 units of the M10 Achilles with the 17-pounder, so he had 8 of those, which is a lot.
Yeah,
that's a lot of shots. And then his... what was his... Oh, yeah, the other thing is he had a platoon of the FFIs.
Oh, the Free French?
So yeah, the French interior partisans, yeah. Okay, and then his last unit was a completely maxed out unit of U.S. Bolt Shermans. He had a jumbo and 4 E8s. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was his reserves, pretty much, was that unit.
Yeah.
right. So
I was seeing scuttlebutt on that on Facebook forums and talking to a bunch of players in the community, a lot of the European players, too, that was actually something a lot of people were looking at as a good one drop reserve role.
Yeah, I thought about it too.
Of the jumbos with the Easy Eights, it's they
also because the Easy Eights would be the only thing that could get stationary rate of fire coming.
Yeah, they can literally roll on and just
yeah. But anyway, spent too much time on the list there. So I had already picked defend, so I couldn't pick defend again because my goal here was to not get ambushed by the Achilles. I went to great lengths to have it happen anyway. So I picked maneuver. So at least I figured that it would be easier to mark the ambush and maneuver mission. I'm getting there.
Okay.
Because he picked defend. Not surprising. And so the mission we got was breakthrough. So breakthrough is the one where
the most common mission.
Is it?
Yeah. It's 8 times. Or I haven't done the check with a new mission matrix, but on the old mission matrix, it was present 8 times.
Wow. Yeah, but breakthrough has basically the defender gets 2 whole quarters to deploy in, and then the objectives go in one corner, and the attacker deploys in the other, except there's no like minimum distance from the center for the objectives, so you can put one like almost literally in the exact center of the board, and then you generally put one close to the opposite side. I had a tricky decision for my reserves because I think I had to choose mine first. Did I? I don't remember. Anyway, so I put my infantry and the M10s in reserve because I didn't want the M10s position to be like known at the beginning of the game so that he could go for them. Because that was the only unit that would really be able to contend with the Shermans when they showed up. So I figured that if the Shermans show up first, then the M10s will be able to
deal with them.
Show up second and then hunt them down. It didn't work out that way, but actually both units survived the game. But anyhow. So he deployed with 1 unit of the Desert Rats and the FFIs, both like on either side of the objective. And his deployment zone, so he was right on top of it. And there was this like little alley between 2 buildings where I could basically just barely fit both units of Avery's, but not more than that. And behind the objective, there was like a wooden fence and then another wooden fence that was like boxing in a plowed field. So, and then there were like, there was a forest a little bit off to the side. Like near the center of the table, and there was a like big field on the opposite side with a hill over it. So what I did is I had to stop an ambush in that forest and in the field. And the field was easy to stop because I just had to drive the Stuarts onto the top of the hill, and then he wouldn't be able to deploy the ambush in there.
Well, yeah, because then, yeah, because then you're losing concealment, so you got to be at long range.
So then basically, like, each of the two Cromwell units went opposite directions, and the plan was to, if he didn't ambush on the first turn, then they would dash to the forest that was, like, closer to the back to get up close to that one so he couldn't get in there either.
So really your game plan in this was preventing, or not necessarily preventing the ambush, but making it happen where you wanted it to happen.
At the very least, I was trying to make him either decide to ambush shooting at something that would be concealed, or just, like, hold the ambush until it's, like, irrelevant or, like, long range or something. But what happened is, so remember the spot, I wish I had a picture of this, the fence behind the objective, which was in front of the fence around the tiny little plowed field, that's important, remember that, because his infantry basically deployed between the two fences. So on turn one, the Avery's move forward, he started close enough for me to just, not even blitz, just, yeah, move, just move and then... Flunk. Bomb him, but the gap between the buildings wasn't large enough for me to also put the Stuarts there, so I couldn't have, like, machine guns covering them in case he tried to assault me, which I figured he would only do if he bailed them out by ambushing them, which he probably wouldn't do if he got a concealed shot at me, which, inside the plowed field, that's what it would have been. Also, the second unit of M10s started way, like, near the back of the board, so they would have had to move and then, yeah, to get shots. Yeah. Anyhow. But the Avery's killed enough infantry in the right spots that he was able to ambush the M10s in front of the first fence. So I literally created the spot that he could ambush in after having covered all of the other ones.
Man, and that's even... That is just... Because it's artillery, so it's not even randomized. It's not even like you can go, oh, he was taking the... No, it's literally, this guy's hit, this guy's hit, this guy's hit. Yeah. So you literally cleared the hole for him.
Yeah. That's one that I guess I'm going to try to learn from, that that's something that can happen, because I would have never thought of that.
Yeah, clearing a spot for an ambush to pop up where you're clearing your opponent's ambush, not them moving to pop up.
Although that's not as funny as one time, Paul, not your Paul, the other Paul... actually ambushed behind a vehicle that I destroyed earlier in the game using it as concealment.
That would work.
Yes, that does that work. That does work. Oh, I don't know if the Pac-40s just burrowed out of the ground and then ambushed me.
But anyway, so then for that game...
The Achilles ambushed me and basically they bailed out three of the Avery's. He actually split his shots. He shot four shots at one unit and four shots at the other. Yeah. He bailed out three of them and killed one, and then the infantry assaulted me, and because of the buildings being where they were, I couldn't defensive fire with them.
Yeah.
So, that killed all the Avery's. That wasn't the end of the world, though, because if I could kill the Achilles that had ambushed, then my tanks would be able to move in and maybe...
And just pure numbers at that point.
Yeah, I mean, they're British infantry, so... And also, that's the other thing with Cromwells. They're terrible at assaulting because they're base reluctant. So I basically need him to just fail his counterattack, which wouldn't happen while the HQ is alive. But anyway. But then on my next turn, when I shot at those Achilles from, like, every angle with the entire tank company, I just didn't roll well enough, and they survived.
Which, sometimes, that's the name of the game, you know?
Yeah. Then his reserves showed up, and the Achilles were shooting back at me, like, two whole platoons of them, and that... pretty much sealed the deal. So at that point, I was just playing to get points.
You got your three,
which
though.
I actually did.
You got your three, so you threw
six.
I
took out the Daimler HQ and one of the Daimler platoons, and I actually eventually did get that one unit of Achilles. I almost got the other one, too. So that was 3 units, that was 3 points. That's the rough thing with armored cars, is when you do win games, if the cars take casualties, yeah, then that's like easy points for your opponent.
And that's something low-key that is one of those little steps up from a casual player to a competitive player.
Is actually thinking about that.
A competitive player losing the game will look at it as, okay, how can I take points away from this person so that they don't score an 8-1 victory?
It's like you're getting points for yourself.
Yeah.
Because I got 3
points. I guess I'm just a vindictive bastard. If you're taking me down, I'm taking as many of these with me as I can.
No, if I lose, they can have as many points as they want. Actually, yeah, if I'm in a game where if the game went on for as long as we wanted and I wouldn't be able to actually win, once I get my 3 points, I concede.
Which makes sense.
Rather than letting it being a 3-3 tie, that's spiteful. Anyway.
Yeah, that's definitely spiteful. Okay, so you had your first game was No Retreat, your second game was Breakthrough. What was your third game?
Third game, I had to pick attack in this one, and I think my opponent's last stance was defend. So I'll go over his list, too. I don't remember his name at all. But which is weird because he was actually my favorite opponent that day. He was fun to play against. He was playing a U.S. Bulge Sherman company with no infantry. He had, in support, he had 6 priests and the U.S. like anti-aircraft unit. The mixed one.
The M-17, M-15, whatever it's called.
It's the one with the 2 different kinds of aircraft guns in it. And in the actual formation, he had basically each unit was a jumbo and 4 late 76s, so no easy 8s.
Yeah, but still giving them the 76, and I'm assuming HVAP on top of that.
Yes, and HVAP. Everything had HVAP. And he had 3 platoons of those. And then his HQ were downgraded 75 millimeters, which will be important later. And this is another one where the terrain played a factor. So I picked attack, he picked defend, and we got dogfight. Dogfight is delayed deep scattered reserves for the defender. It's like a worse version of no retreat for the defender. So, along my side of the board, between my deployment zone and his, there was like a line of terrain pieces that would have required cross checks. There was like a stone wall around a building, and then there was a forest, and then a church on the other side of the road from the forest, and then there was another gap, and then another forest. And he had 5 minefields. So between each of these pieces of terrain that would have needed cross checks for vehicles, he put a minefield.
So go ahead, roll for minefield. The, and roll
the literal only way I could get across the board was either go through a minefield or go through something that required a cross check. So my plan was to do a first turn, go follow me with the infantry to get into the first minefield, and then clear it the next turn. But in order to do that, you can't be pinned down.
Yeah.
And my infantry were like rallying on a 3+. They were by the HQ. I rolled snake eyes. So I didn't clear the minefield on turn 2 like I planned. I got it on turn 3. But being slowed down by 1 turn was a big problem. Because, so obviously I had to win the game before his reserves destroyed me. And this is like a classic, like Cromwell's versus Sherman's comparison. That's what the game turned into, because like his armor is better, his guns are so much better.
Because they just have the base 75s, right?
The Cromwells,
they got the AT-10.
So smoke. I'm AT-10 versus his armor 7 at the worst, pretty much, unless I got a side shot, which is pretty hard. And then the jumbos I can't touch.
And then the HVAP Sherman 76s are AT-13, so you're not even rolling saves.
And because of the jumbos, even all the 17-pounders that I had in that list were unreliable against him, but it was enough to slow him down by bailing out a bunch of tanks. But the thing that the Cromwells have against the Shermans, besides being cheaper, is that they're, like, literally, like, more than twice as fast when they're dashing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. 28 inches is...
28 inches... Well, not more than twice as fast, but, yeah, 28 inches versus 18 inches is the fastest the Shermans could ever go.
And you don't... And people don't realize how large 28 inches is until you see that on the table.
It is almost half the board, because think about it. The board is 6 feet, so half the board is 36 inches. Mm-hmm. 28 inches is... Quite literally, just almost,
and,
yeah.
And then if you follow me successfully after that, you got a 30-inch.
Okay, well, I'm reluctant, so that's not going to happen.
Okay. Well, the way I learned, I'm still going to try. The way I learned how crazy that was playing against roommate Paul with my Soviets.
Yeah.
Because T-34s have the same Cromwell stats. They got a 28-inch cross-country or something, or it might be 26, but obscenely long, where it didn't really... It didn't really calculate in my head how long that was until I had a game where it was, oh, I need to get over there. And I went, that's going to take two or three turns. Wait, I'm almost there after one turn of dashing.
Yeah.
You know?
So the he deployed one of his Sherman units in another wood that was like a little bit in his deployment zone by the objective that was near the front. Mm-hmm. And then once I, like, moved up some stuff to the stone wall with just the intent of, like, shooting at those guys, I was gonna, like, go for that objective, and then if I destroyed the guys there, then I could take it. Yeah. And if I didn't, then I could go for the other one. And then once I moved up there, he ambushed his second Sherman platoon in the same woods at a different spot. And based on the way he deployed, I probably should have anticipated that that was exactly what he was going to do. But I'm glad that he did, because if he held that that ambush for the whole game, I wouldn't have been able to do what I did. But
And then that's one of those things, too, that you told me a while ago, that that's one of the things that 80 to 90% of the time matters in competitive games, not blowing your ambush too early.
Yeah. It restricts your opponent's movement more by not being there.
And it's also the capability, depending on the unit, to save the unit.
Yeah.
You know, being able to, quote-unquote, deploy one, and then, okay, it's turn four, three-quarters of my list is obliterated, half of my opponent's list is obliterated, here's a full health unit ready to go.
Yeah. Exactly where you want it to. That's also why marking the ambushes so that they can't go in the right spot is important when you're attacking. But anyhow. So he deployed it in that forest. So there's now... 8 Shermans sitting in this forest in various states of build out or destroyed, or not. And so they basically had a shootout with the Fireflies and the M10s that the M10s eventually lost. But on turn 3, the Canadians actually cleared the minefield. So guess what I did? I cross-country dashed across right the entire back. Board.
Cleared the radio call. Sir, the minefield's been cleared. All right, get out of here.
So it took me 2 turns to get all the way to the objective in the back edge.
He couldn't do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that?
One of his reserves came in. He had perfect reserves in this game, by the way, because he had Patton. His first turn, he got the Shermans in, except they came on the side near the front objective.
Yeah.
And so they obliterated one of the Stuart units that was trying to dash over there. So that was an unfortunate casualties, but...
That is something that I really... That card is literally the reason why Americans are such a close option in my head for competitive play. The capability to reroll your reserves, just as a rule, is so good. Because I think it's 70% of the missions on the Matrix use reserves.
And well, being as able, it should be, but...
Yeah, as it should be, but being able to do it better, but then it's...
Yeah.
Sad violin when it doesn't work, like in our game.
Yeah.
Where you... Yeah.
Well, in this one, it did work.
Yeah.
So, but even with his reserves coming in perfect, like, turn 3 when he got to roll for it first, and then he got both of the other ones in turn 2, which was the priests and the AA, by the way. But the only thing he had defending his... he had armored mortars too. I forgot about
that. Oh yeah, the little.
But the armored mortars were buried in the forest, with the HQ at the front of the forest spotting for them. Yeah, the Cromwells and Stuarts dash across the entire board, and then had to like fight tooth and nail to kill the AA things. Well, stop themselves from being killed by from direct fire by the priests and then kill the HQ, which they ended up bailing out the HQ. And also, get this, there were 4 teams in the Canadian platoon left. They got back in their transports and then dashed across the board too. And then next turn they got out, and at this point I had bailed out both HQ tanks, and I had positioned so that the armored mortars that weren't bailed out wouldn't be able to machine gun me, because I was basically charging. The bailed out HQ were in between between them and the Canadians. So then the Canadians assaulted them and captured the bailed out tanks and forced the armored mortars to fall back. Actually, it destroyed them too. So the only thing...
Did they fail their cross-checks or something?
A lot of them were bailed out.
Oh, okay.
And so the only thing that was contesting the objective at this point was the AA guns. And he moved up a couple priests to contest it too. But at this point, I had 1 tank in my HQ unit left. The Fireflies just stayed behind, by the way, while the...
Which makes sense.
Cromwell's dashed across. Makes sense. That's what you do with that formation. The Fireflies stay where they are, because if you don't move, being out of command does not matter. For shooting.
Yeah.
So I had 3 Cromwells in 1 platoon and the HQ, and then 3 Stuarts and both units of Avery's. And also, it turns out that the Avery's actually bailed out 2 vehicles by shooting them in their side armor with regular machine guns. They have 3 MG shots.
That can do it.
But U.S. half-tracks are side armor 0.
Yep.
So if he rolled a 1, then I don't need to get the 6 firepower to bail him out. And then, of course, so on that turn, then the Canadians assaulted the bailed-out AA guns, and then that was the game.
Yeah.
I took the objective.
Yeah. Not bad. Overall, too. It was
a really close game.
And those games can be a lot of fun, too, with a nail-biter. And especially that last game, I feel, is a perfect representation of what their special rules did. You go to any other tournament in the country, would you see a Desert Rats Cromwells fighting against a Bold Sherman?
No, not really, but that's mostly because Cromwells are bad.
Well, still, though, overall, you know, you'd be seeing infantry with... And granted, I do enjoy that because that is pretty historical. You know, the competitive lists are within reason. I'm going to have some button counters getting ready to stab me. They're relatively historical in terms of infantry or armored infantry with some tank support. That's how units tend to...
I think there are actually some tank companies that are meta, though.
Yeah.
Like the Niddles. Yeah. The Niddle Cat.
Yeah, the Niddle Cat. Yeah, definitely the Niddle Cat.
There's a lot of them, actually. Like, some of the top lists at Gen Con were U.S. Shermans, too.
U.S. Shermans. That's right, because they can get so...
There was at least one. I think the top table was Niddle Cat versus Niddle Shermans.
Niddle Shermans. Makes sense, because you can do some... I mean, and just with how Bulge American is written.
The jumbo in the unit is really good. Like, it's insane how hard it is to actually kill that unit when you, your shots keep bouncing to the jumbo.
Yeah. And it's just a Swiss Army knife in terms of unit composition.
Yeah, it also helps that Americans have the best artillery in the game.
Yeah, they're able to actually properly support it.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, So I think at the beginning you took third place.
I took third place, yeah.
Which is solid.
Because I had 8 points in the first game, 3 points in the second game, and 6 points in the last game. So my final score was, I don't know.
8, 6, 3, 9, 17.
Yeah,
17 points.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty solid, especially for some of the names that were there too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hell yeah, man. Well, that's. That's really all I got for it, because I just got to sit on the sidelines and watch. But we'll be making a shift into Team Yankee here over the next few months. I got a tournament I'm hosting at Grognard Games in Roselle. 80 points, Team Yankee. So if any of you are listening in the area and you're interested, check it out on Facebook. I got an event made. I've posted it in all of the Team Yankee groups I'm a part of and the local groups as well. It's a $10 buy-in. Grognard is a great store. They do real good with prize support and such as well, making it making it worthwhile to come out. And it's a relatively easy location to get to in terms of interstates. I mean, it's Illinois interstates, which are going to be bullshit, but it's you're not going through back roads like some places you got to get to. Yeah. So September 24th, list submission is the 16th of September. The Friday before the tournament is when lists are due. So feel free to check that out. And as always, if you're liking what we're doing, please check out my Patreon. I'll have that link down below. Lowest tier is just $1 a month, guys. Every little bit helps so that I can keep doing this for you guys, giving you content and doing what I love. So I guess with that, thank you all for listening. Comment, like, subscribe. We enjoy hearing feedback because that's the only way we grow, right? They can't see you nod.
Okay.
For those who missed it, that was a nod. I don't know if my mic picked up his neck creaking as he nodded, but that'll be all. Signing off. We'll see you guys next time.